convict 9 people of murder of one cop with one bullet from one gun, especially when you can't even prove that any one of them did it, but you're going to convict 9 people, give them each the same sentence of 100-year maximum sentences?
From the studios of Freak Radio 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, it's time for the Weekly Freak Show. Headlines and highlights for the week ending Thursday, July 5th, 2001. My name's the V-Man, and I'll be your host for this half-hour look back at the news and features not heard in or glanced over by the corporate-controlled media. On this week's program, a report about the killing of an alleged bank robber by Santa Cruz police, and later, an update on new evidence surfacing in the case of the Move 9, convicted in the shooting death of a Philadelphia police officer in 1978. Plus, this week's Spotlight Sound. Stand by for the Weekly Freak Show, coming up next. And now, headlines for the week ending Thursday, July 5th, 2001. Civil servants in Zambia have ended their national strike, which was in its second month, after winning raises of up to 91%. We have reached a deal with government. We have been given between 80 to 91% salary increases, which is immediately effective, Zambia Congress of Trade Unions Deputy President Jafat said. The deal was finalized on Friday, June 29th, and the workers have accepted the government offer. The raises take effect immediately. Approximately 80,000 public workers in Zambia, including nurses and school teachers, have been on an open-ended strike for more than 1 month, crippling government operations. The strike was the first time that all civil servants had taken labor action together instead of under their separate unions. The workers had wanted government to double their salaries, which were less than $50 a month, considered below the poverty line there. The government initially offered only a 35% increase. The strike had forced government hospitals to shut down some admission wards. Most schools had suspended classes, which resulted in student riots in some parts of the country. About 2,000 people gathered in the militarized streets of Salzburg, Austria, to protest the World Economic Forum, an elite group of businessmen and politicians whose summer conference began on Sunday, July 1st, to discuss the expansion of the European Union. More than 4,000 police and armed state guards were deployed to prevent any kind of meaningful discourse about the political and economic influence of World Economic Forum leaders. Hundreds of people were turned away at the borders, and journalists were harassed and intimidated, with many having their footage confiscated. A march of about 1,000 people was surrounded by riot police for almost 5 hours before folks were allowed to disperse in small groups under the glare of floodlights. Security measures for the event cost roughly $1.25 million per day. Around 200 Bolivian workers and anarcho-feminist activists occupied the office of the superintendent of banks on July 2nd, demanding relief of personal debt. Top-level functionaries of the banking authority were tied up in their offices, and bundles of dynamite were tied to their bodies to prevent any kind of police intervention. The activists wore dozens of dynamite sticks around their bodies, and some carried old military firearms. At least a dozen activists positioned themselves on the balconies of the fifth floor of the banking authority's building and gave speeches using bullhorns. "We are here because nobody is listening to us. These people are showing the typical hard-heartedness of bankers. We are here because we cannot pay our debts." One woman protester used a bullhorn to communicate her complaint to the police surrounding the place. "For the poor, there is no relief. No justice. They have taken everything from us, leaving us sticks of dynamite to eat. Because only the dealmakers have rights, we have been here, living in the street, in the cold of night, with scarcely one meal a day, for more than 90 days, and nobody will listen to us." Representing the debtors at a press conference, another woman declared, "We cannot live while there is no dialogue to solve our problem, and if no solution is found, we are determined to commit suicide right in front of them because we cannot put up with this situation any longer." Those occupying the building represent a movement of approximately 12,000 workers and homeless Bolivians who have borrowed small amounts of money but faced abuse at the hands of the country's financial institutions. For over 90 days, thousands of debtors have been demonstrating peacefully in the Bolivian capital of La Paz to demand debt forgiveness. The occupiers took up to 60 hostages and threatened to burn the building down before negotiating a settlement with police, convincing the country's banks to re-evaluate many loans. This action followed a tense week in Bolivia after government troops shot farmers who were blockading a highway in the Bolivian Antiplano, demanding social and economic rights. Bolivia has exploded in protest lately, with farmers, health workers, teachers, students, and many other sectors of society vocally stating their rights in the face of harsh and sometimes deadly reaction from the Bolivian government. On Tuesday, July 3rd, six people were arrested after animal rights activists blockaded several entrances of the Biomedical Primate Research Center near The Hague, Netherlands. Up to 150 employees were prohibited from entering this center for several hours as a result of a lockdown. The Biomedical Primate Research Center is the largest of its kind in Europe and has been the target of both public and covert actions by animal rights activists. In this center, 1,600 apes and monkeys, including chimps, marmosets, rhesus, and Java monkeys, are tortured every day in the name of science. Activists and scientists alike have criticized the center for its treatment of the animals, and for the controversial experiments, including xenotransplantation, that take place there. The six arrested have been released and will appear in court in January 2002. Ruby Rivlin, the Israeli Minister of Communication, was hit in the face with a sweet cream cake on the morning of Wednesday, July 4th, as he was finishing a meeting of the Economic Committee inside the Israel Parliament Hall. Three activists were arrested after the incident. Rivlin was targeted for his support of a proposed merger, blending three cable television conglomerates into one company, which would also control newspapers and magazines in Israel. This action is believed to be the first of its kind carried out in the country. And finally, the unlicensed Black Ball Radio, 89.1 FM in Seattle, Washington, signed off for the last time on Wednesday, July 4th. Started 1 year ago to distribute programming from an internet radio station, Black Ball Radio managed to avoid interference from the FCC and has declared a small victory in the fight to free the media from corporate control. The people behind Black Ball Radio will take the lessons learned from this project and have promised to return with a new endeavor in the near future. And those were headlines for the week ending Thursday, July 5th, 2001. On Friday, June 29th, six officers from the Santa Cruz Police Department opened fire on a white van occupied by 29-year-old Raymond Quinton, who was wanted in connection with a pair of recent bank robberies in the area. A preliminary finding by the District Attorney's Office has concluded that the six officers justifiably fired their weapons, but many questions remain unanswered by local authorities. It has not been made clear exactly how many shots were fired, and witness statements vary between 10 and 30. Mike King was in a nearby office when he heard sirens and turned on his police radio scanner.
It was all just one volley, about maybe 20 or 30 rounds. I mean, it just went, they fired it up. Then they said that the guy's still moving, he's still armed, we're not code 4, we're not okay.
Fired his weapon too?
Don't know if he fired his weapon. I just, all of a sudden, everything just erupted in this big firefight.
Mainstream media reports state it is unclear whether Quinton died from police gunfire or a self-inflicted wound, yet there is no evidence to suggest this. Even a police press release states that no other gunfire occurred since the initial police fire. I spoke with one person on condition of anonymity.
You said you heard possibly 10 shots. Would you say, after the initial round of shots that you heard, did you hear any other gunshots?
No, there's only one. I think there's only one really round of shots that was fired. I think there was just one barrage of shots, and that was it.
Raymond Quinton had recently been released from prison for a series of robberies in late 1996. A federal warrant was issued for Quinton's arrest after he failed to report to a probation officer. A stakeout of the area had been ongoing since the night before when the van was located in the shopping center parking lot.
From what I heard from the police, they knew that that was his van and that they were waiting for him to return to it so they could corner him. They knew it was his van and they were waiting for him to come back. And they had undercover. The cars that they were using were undercover cars. They were unmarked. police cars. You know, they didn't have any police markings, and I don't know if there were actually cops in the cars in police uniforms, but their cars were not marked as police cars.
A Santa Cruz resident who happened on the scene and was filming relayed a similar tale.
They were waiting for him. There were some cops waiting behind there, and I guess there's been a series of robberies, and that they were waiting for this guy. They had a description of the vehicle, and then they apparently just swooped down on him, and he didn't react immediately. He was moving around the van, and then they opened fire on him. And I've heard estimates
Did he have a gun?
I don't know. Don't know at all. The estimates of, and there's nobody said that he's shot out at all, but I've heard it was that somewhere between 30 and 50 shots went off at once.
Investigators have recovered a gun from the van's floor, but it is unclear if Quentin pointed it at police. Many witnesses refused to come forward with what they saw, fearing reprisals from police. After the initial gunfire, the critically injured man could be seen moving about the van.
He kept leaning over and falling on the horn, and then the horn would like beep for a long time, and then he'd lean back. He looked really hurt, and he kept falling forward and backward and trying to lift his hands, and they were just being really cautious and running around with their guns. And then he seemed to flop over to the side, to his right side. And that's when everything seemed to change.
After more than 2 hours, the county SWAT team sent in a robot equipped with cameras to see into the van. He appeared to be dead. After setting off a flashbang grenade, SWAT team members removed his lifeless body from the van, ending the tense situation. In the meantime, the six officers involved in the shooting are on paid leave, pending results of a final investigation. This is the V-Man reporting for Freak Radio Santa Cruz. From the studios of Freak Radio 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, you're tuned to the Weekly Freak Show on Lake 101.7 FM in Muskego, Wisconsin. Please have a pen and paper ready to take down our contact info at the end of this half-hour broadcast. Up next, this week's Spotlight Sound, Just Because They Jailed by the Seeds of Wisdom. But before we get to that, I wanted to inform you that I'll be taking a little time off from producing the Weekly Freak Show. Some matters in my personal life need attention right now, and I cannot find the time to continue this program. Look for a return sometime in the fall.
Just because they jailed don't mean they did a crime. There's a lot of people in jail for being available, cause that's all you need in this world to be locked up. If a judge wants you to go to jail for life, all he gotta do is give him what your sentence will pop up. A judge can tell you freedom or imprisonation, but a judge don't know what happened, you only got accusations. And when he sent a person to jail for a crime that he never saw that person commit, they'll jail anybody, even if they're innocent, and give you whatever time they want you to get.
When you just hang a person, put a person in electric gas, a person shoot a person to death for a crime that you ain't seen that person commit, you ain't solving no crime. You causing a problem for the mother that's now without a son, wife without a husband, daughter without a father, and society putting faith in this goddamn procedure.
Just because they jail don't mean they did a crime. Just because they jail don't mean they did a crime. Just because they're jail don't mean they did a crime. Just because they're jail don't mean they did a crime. They said Move killed one of they cops, but Ram was facing Move when he got shot. He got shot in the back of the neck. The bullet traveled down while he's getting shot. Move trying not to drown, ducking and dodging bullets from the other cops, but still blaming on Move and Ref got shot. The bullet that they took out of the cops didn't match none of the guns that they got from Move, so ain't no case to prove Move is innocent, but the judge said they still should be sent. And a couple days later, the judge was on a talk show. Mumia, a reporter, called in and asked, yo, who killed that cop? The judge admitted he didn't know, he had the faintest idea, but Move still went to jail from 30 to 100 years with no bail. They did the same to Mumia in 1981. They rigged up and tricked up some stuff with his gun.
In 1981, Mumia riding in a cab. He turned and looked and seen his brother getting beat bad and went to check his brother. He got shot and somebody killed, but nothing left. The crime's about to tell you about Mumia in 1981. To concentrate on what happened with the gun, Mumia had a Mia, the innocent man.
Just because they jail don't mean they did a crime. Just because they jail
don't mean they did a crime.
Just because they jail
don't mean they did a crime.
Just because they jail
don't mean they did a crime.
Sylvia Baraldini, Marilyn Buck standing dear. Raylan Vassar, Sunni Yada, Linda Peltier, Oscar Lopez, Ricardo Jimenez, Mutulu Shakur, freedom fighters, all prisoners of war. Just because they jailed don't mean they did a crime. And if you stand and kill us, then the info is the bombs. Set all political prisoners free. I was born a political prisoner at HOC. House of correction, but they don't correct nobody, cause people come out worse than they would be. HOC must mean home of corruption. This is all facts, not a guess or assumption, cause
prisons is a money-making industry. And if you speak out about it, that's where you'll be. Or dead on death row, where Momir is. And since I'm talking about it, here's a pop quiz. If Faulkner would've lived and Momir was the one to die, would Faulkner be on the road fighting for his life? Just because they're jail don't mean they did a crime. And just because they did the crime don't mean they're doing a time. Now I'm gonna name some political prisoners, from preachers and politics and judges and ministers. Y'all care about justice, say yes, not no. Two political prisoners that we named them. Here we go. Russell Schultz.
Yeah, yeah.
Cormier Valentin.
Yeah, yeah.
Edward Cortez.
Yeah, yeah.
Linda Evans.
Yeah, yeah.
Thomas Manning.
Yeah, yeah.
Alicia Rodriguez.
Yeah, yeah.
Ida Rodriguez.
Yeah, yeah.
Richard Williams.
Yeah, yeah.
Marshall Eddie Conway.
Yeah, yeah.
Jaleel Mutin King.
Yeah, yeah.
Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Yeah, yeah.
Phil Africa.
Yeah, yeah.
Delbert Africa.
Yeah, yeah.
Chucky Africa.
Yeah, yeah.
Mike Africa.
Yeah, yeah.
Janine Africa.
Yeah, yeah.
Janet Africa.
Yeah, yeah.
Debbie Africa.
Yeah, yeah.
And Merle Africa.
Yeah, yeah.
Free all political prisoners.
On the move. Long live John Africa. And down with this rotten-ass system.
Got arrested, they treated us really bad, you know, because that was like 20 years ago, and they were really trying to break us. They really felt like at that point when they arrested us in 78, we would be vulnerable and they could break us up, make us leave, move. They kept us isolated from the door. As soon as we got to the prison, they isolated us away from anybody, kept us locked in a cell 24 hours a day. Wouldn't let anybody bring us clothing or anything. We had to really fight. We were going to our preliminary hearings, and every time we went to court, we were exposing the county prison for what they were doing, and eventually it was getting out in the public, so they had to let us out of isolation and let us have regular visits and get clothing items and things we needed. And then we came up to the state prison, and the state prison did the same thing. You know, they tried to break us. They put us into the RHU isolation. As soon as we hit the prison grounds, told us we were going to stay there till we gave blood or until our sentence was up, which is 30 to 100 years. You know, we went on a hunger strike and told them, you're not going to persecute us like this. You know, we're going to show you that you are not going to beat us down. So we was on a hunger strike for 50 days. On the 45th day, they sent these guards up to our cell, jumped us, held us down, smashed our face into the floor so we couldn't see what they was doing, and raped us of our blood, shot us up with something else because all of us got real sick, dry heaving, all kind of stuff happened. You know, I lost my sight for a minute. We never to this day know what they gave us. And a few days after that, they put us in population, and we went through confrontation after confrontation with them because they tried their best to beat us down and take us away from our beliefs, you know. We spent 3 years in RHU. Finally, when they let us out, because our family on the street was keeping a lot of pressure on them and they saw we wasn't breaking, they let us out and they backed off of us for a while and they watched us and they saw that we weren't nothing like them. Again, like the news media said, they thought we were crazy. So when they saw how we are hard-working, honest, clean people, they backed off and they, you know, stopped blatantly mistreating us like that. Then we established that pattern in Muncie, and then we got transferred up here to Cambridge Springs, and they didn't do us as bad as Muncie, but they tried their little things too, like splitting us up, because at one point at Muncie, we all lived together in one cell, and we had been living like that for years. We got up here, they split us up on different floors, different cells. We had never lived with anybody other than our sisters. They put us in the
one
room
minute remaining
with two other people that we don't know anything about. And we had to really fight these people to get what we have now. Now we're all together. After Mo died, then they put us together. Other than that, they're not really doing too much to us. You know, just little things here and there. But, you know, the example that we set all these years.
That was Janine Africa, one of more than 2 million American men and women who spent this Independence holiday behind bars. I spoke to her by telephone from her cell at the Fullerton Correctional Facility in Cambridge Springs, Pennsylvania, in December of 1999. Janine is one of the MOVE 9 who were sentenced to between 30 and 100 years for the death of one Philadelphia police officer, James Ramp, who was killed in a shootout on August 8, 1978. The officer was facing the MOVE house, yet was shot in the back from above. MOVE members were positioned in their basement at the time of the shooting. New information has come out to suggest that the initial shot did not come from the police or MOVE. If court documents recently filed prove true, the initial shot came from Larry Manning, firing from a second-story window at a house up the block from the one occupied by MOVE. During the trial, two reporters testified that they were crouching behind a garage adjacent to the house when they heard a male voice yell out, "Kill the motherfucker," immediately followed by the opening gunshot. Several police officers and firefighters also testified during the trial that they saw a gun muzzle sticking out of a window of the house, and gunfire coming from that same direction. Unfortunately, we'll never hear Manning's side of the story, as he's been dead since the 1980s. Friends of MOVE hope this new evidence will lead to a post-conviction relief hearing, and ultimately freedom for the MOVE 9. Ramona Africa is the Minister of Information for MOVE. She is the sole adult survivor of the May 13, 1985 police bombing of another MOVE house in Philadelphia and spent 7 years in prison on charges of riot. Freak Radio's Old Lady Scararms recently spoke with Ramona. She begins by describing the MOVE philosophy and discusses what led up to the August 8, 1978 siege of MOVE.
The MOVE organization is a revolutionary organization founded by a black man named John Africa. The organization is not a black organization. There are white people in MOVE. There are Spanish people in MOVE. There are Asian people in MOVE. People from all different nationalities and backgrounds in MOVE. What John Africa taught MOVE to believe in is very simple. Life. To respect and protect life, that there's nothing more important than life. And because of that, because of our belief, we surfaced here in Philadelphia with demonstrations at the Philadelphia Zoo, at the Barnum and Bailey Circus. We had peaceful demonstrations at unsafe boarding homes for the elderly, you know, where we protested the conditions that they were forced to live in these group homes. We had long sustained demonstrations at the school board here in Philadelphia for their misdirection of the youth. And these were the things that we did. All we did was speak out, tell the truth, and for doing this, something that this government claims that everybody has the right to do in this country. We were beat up. Pregnant MOVE women were beat, stomped, kicked into miscarriage. We were locked up. Our brothers were beat bloody. Our children were thrown over banisters, snatched from their mothers, heads banged against the bars of cell doors when they locked us up and snatched their children away from us. And finally, we were set up on false charges and given 100 years in jail, nine of my MOVE sisters and brothers. We were ultimately bombed and had our babies and adults and our animals burnt alive. I mean, all this for doing nothing but speaking freely. Something that this very day, today, people are told to celebrate that this is the greatest country in the world because this is where you have freedom of speech. In their frenzy to kill MOVE people, a cop got killed. Not by MOVE, because this policeman was killed with a bullet that entered the back of his neck with the bullet traveling downward. And that's very important because there's been conflicting reports. First they said the man was shot in the back of the neck, then they tried to say he was shot in the front. We believe their first report was right, and they realized when they said that no MOVE person could have done that, so they switched it up, you know.
Now, why could MOVE not have done that?
Because this man was standing, the policeman, James Ramp, was standing on street level facing MOVE headquarters. Now, if you're shooting at someone who is standing in front of you and 6 feet above you on street level and you're in a basement and they're up on street level, if you believe MOVE people were shooting, which has yet to be proven, the only direction MOVE people could have been shooting was up, not down. And they would have been facing the front of this man. He was facing them, not the back. How could somebody 6 feet below you and in front of you shoot you in the back of the neck with the bullet traveling downward? It's physically impossible.
And the police knew that MOVE was in the basement.
Oh, yeah. They admit that. They admit that. That's not a bone of contention at all.
And as a matter of fact, they attempted to flood or did flood MOVE.
They did,
out of
yeah.
the basement with
yeah,
water.
The fire department, who's supposed to save lives, was working in cahoots with the police to try to kill MOVE people, men, women, and babies, pregnant women as well, you know. Yeah, they flooded the basement. The fire department cut a hole in the first floor of MOVE headquarters so that they could look down on MOVE people in the basement and shoot down at them in the basement. So there was never any question about MOVE people being in the basement at all. And 9 MOVE people, 5 men and 4 women, were all convicted of murder and each sentenced to 30 to 100 years, 30-year minimums to 100-year maximum sentences in prison. Now, how is it possible, number one, to convict 9 people of murder of one cop with one bullet from one gun, especially when you can't even prove that any one of them did it, but you're going to convict 9 people, give them each the same sentence of 100-year maximum sentences? Within an hour or two after arresting my family, city officials had MOVE headquarters, the scene of the crime where this policeman was shot to death by somebody, they demolished it, tore it down. Since when do you destroy the scene of a crime? And why? If these people really believe that a revolutionary organization like MOVE shot and killed a policeman from that building, why would they destroy the evidence by destroying the building? Why? They would never do that. MOVE is not in prison because of the accusation of murder. Not at all. MOVE people are in prison for being revolutionaries, for being, you know, disciples of John Africa, for telling the truth.
Why is the government and the police attacking MOVE?
Well, the police attack us because they are very simply the hitmen, the army, you know, the occupying army and local army,
and
for
the
those
police,
running this what system.
What are the police like in Philadelphia?
Philadelphia has one of the most vicious, brutal police forces in the United States, you know, and that is not to minimize New York, you know, L.A. or any place else, but in none of those cities have they ever dropped the bomb on anybody like that. So, you know, Philadelphia, the Philadelphia police force has a peculiar notoriety, you know.
So you mentioned the police are just doing the dirty work. What's behind the police? Why is the government, why was the government attacking the MOVE organization?
Because they feel threatened by what, you know, we represent and what we're doing, because we're not simply criticizing the government and saying, oh, man, you know, that's wrong. They shouldn't do that. We are exposing them clearly and this is the important part. What John Africa have given us is the solution to how to put things right. A very simple solution, you know. The main thing that people have to do, and what this government doesn't want people to ever focus on or consider, is the only way that we will ever have freedom is to free ourselves from this system, period.
And that's all the time we have this week. Thanks for listening. The Weekly Freak Show is produced in the studios of Freak Radio, 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, and can also be heard on more than 18 non-commercial, micro-powered, community, and web-based radio stations, including Radio Volta from the Philadelphia Independent Media Center on the World Wide Web at radiovolta.org. The interviews featured in this program are only a sample of the fine shows each week on Freak Radio. To hear it all, 24 hours a day, listen online at www.microradio.net/FRSC. That's www.microradio.net/FRSC. For questions and comments, send email to vman@baymoon.com. That's vman@baymoon.com. Or snail mail to P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. That's P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Or call us at area code 831-427-4523. That's 831-427-4523. Thanks to the A-Info's Radio Project and Independent Media Centers for distribution. Our theme music was arranged and performed by Neil Norman and his Cosmic Orchestra. For Old Lady Scar Arms and all the folks here at Freak Radio, my name's the V-Man, and that's a wrap.